You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, it's your host, Lurk. We at lambgoat.com just want to give a big thanks and shout out to everyone who's checked out the podcast thus far and all the support we've gotten. If you're listening to us on a platform that you can rate and review the show, we ask that you please do so. It greatly helps us out. Be sure to check out lambgoat.com, but also follow our socials. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at lambgoat, and you can also find us on Facebook. And if you already didn't know, you can check out all these podcasts in video format on our YouTube channel, as well as other content. And speaking of other content, Lambgoat would like to introduce the VanFlip Patreon. If you've enjoyed the show and you would like to continue supporting the VanFlip podcast, for just $5 a month, you can be a Patreon supporter. Not only will you help be improving the podcast and helping it grow, but Patreon supporters also get early access to episodes, bonus episodes, exclusive content, Patreon-only live streams, behind-the-scenes content, Q&As, Lambgoat swag, and much more. To become a Patreon supporter, head over to www.patreon.com/thevanflip. If you would like to become a sponsor of The Van Flip, drop us a line at info@lambgoat.com. And this week's podcast is brought to you by Danny Wimmer Presents. They invited us out to Welcome to Rockville in Jacksonville, Florida to cover the festival. And we also would like to give a big shout out to Christine at Ashton Magnuson Media, as well as Selena from FRPR. Not only were we able to check out Tool's new song Invincible at Welcome to Rockville, which we have uploaded onto our YouTube channel right now, but we also ran into Keith Buckley, lead singer of Every Time I Die and The Damn Things.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no, it's a... Oh no, no, no! Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Van Flip. We have a very special guest, Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die fame and The Damn Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, you are in Jacksonville with The Damn Thing.
Yeah, miraculously. I didn't think I was going to make it here.
Well, you played in Mexico this weekend.
Every Time I Die, I played in Mexico City last night, and I went to the airport at around 11 p.m. to kind of get ready for my 5 a.m. flight, and then everything got canceled because Houston was underwater, and just a lot of stressing out, but I made it. We're actually going to have to switch spots today, and our tour manager, who, you know, has never worked with The Damn Things before, but he works with Every Time I Die a lot, he's like, do I really have to go talk to Zach Wilde about switching spots with those guys, because they're after you, and if you don't make it on time, then you got to switch with them. And he's like, please don't fucking make me go ask him to play before you guys. So luckily I got here. It was a miracle.
But you got here. Ian didn't, though, right?
No, yeah, he didn't, because what happened was, so once all my shit got canceled, can I swear?
Is that okay? Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Once all my shit got canceled last night, I told everybody, I'm like, it doesn't look like I'm going to make it into town on California, where he lives. Everyone else had flown out early to kind of like get the feel of the fest. But Scott's like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to catch a flight out if we're not going to play. Because, you know, he's got a kid. He's got a wife.
Yeah.
So,
a whole
totally
life.
Understandable. Yeah. So, then it ended up that I made all my flights miraculously. But he had already switched it. So, then his late flight got canceled because of the weather.
Yeah, we had shitty weather yesterday. The festival actually got canceled for a little bit.
Got bumped a little bit, yeah. That's kind of what I was praying for tonight, too. Just to sort of give me a little bit of leeway. But it worked out, so.
Well, how was Mexico?
Yeah, it was a whirlwind. I mean, it was cool. The bands that played were pretty weird. I saw Vince Neil play solo, just doing, you know, Motley Crue covers. Boy, yeah,
not as good as the whole band.
I mean, boy, it was rough, but it was cool to hear those songs live. I guess if I just didn't look and just kind of heard it,
close your eyes, yeah, think back to the
imagine
years,
the then. Glory days instead of.
Well, that's how I kind of felt with Tom Morello yesterday.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who was he with?
No one. It was just him.
Just him.
Yeah, I think it's like a solo artist tour situation.
Okay, that's fucking weird to me, too, because Slash played yesterday in Mexico City, but, like, Slash is, you know, he's a guitar player, so what is, I mean, I guess he writes the songs, but then how do you know who to hire to, like, represent your songs in that way? I don't know how a guitar player starts a band as a solo artist.
Well, Tom's first song yesterday was kind of like a dubstep trappy guitar song. So I was really caught off guard.
Okay.
And then he kind of, one of the cool things was he played all the riffs from all the big Rage Against the Machine songs.
But you can't sing along to riffs.
No.
So, like, what does the crowd do?
Well, they did play Bomb Track at the end, and the crowd sang.
Who sang?
The crowd.
The crowd was the singer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lead vocalist, the crowd.
We also had a song with Killer Mike, I believe.
Really?
Was it Killer Mike and...
Ice Cube.
Killer Mike and Ice Cube were, I guess, have a song with Tom Morello, and they played Killer Mike's part in the back, and Big Boy, or I'm sorry, Ice Cube was in the back on like a
interesting video. You have to do it.
If I was gonna see Tom Morello, I'm glad the medley thing happened,
sure,
because I don't know if I'll ever see those songs live, the Rage Against the Machine songs, because I never saw them live, but
yeah,
you know, it's like the fourth best thing,
I guess. So that's weird to me. I don't know, I don't think I jeopardize my legacy by doing something like that where you just like hire dudes to stand in, like the Vince Neil thing. Look, I'm not going to disparage any musician that wants to keep playing music. That's awesome. But, like, it just seemed like the drummer for that band was, like, a weird Tommy Lee impersonator. Like, he was, like, skinny, long black hair, like, wore a jersey, you know, shirt underneath, doing, like, zany gimmicks and, like...
Was it Machine Gun Kelly?
No. Well, that's why I figured that must have happened. I figured that, you know, Netflix does this thing with The Dirt. Vince Neil realizes there's some more money to, or, you know, some more money, whatever. To just, I guess, squeeze it out. I don't know. I mean, fine. It was fine. It's
all good. It's not ideal.
It's not. Especially when, like, you grew up on bands like that, listening to that, and, like, these guys are the, you know, that is the epitome of what rock and roll is. That's that's a party band, and that's the rock and roll lifestyle. And, you know, obviously that's a terrible, when you break it down, that's like a really terrible way to live. But when you're a kid and that's California and those are rock stars, it's a God thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You'll never achieve it. And then you just see it like get older and slower and a little, I don't know,
bigger.
Lazier. Yeah. Bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in fan base either. Just
no.
Bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bursting sausages.
So, we'll cut to the damn thing since that's why you're in town. We'll do a couple things about that. Is this your first show back as a full band?
Second, actually. We played in LA a few days ago. Today's the 4th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe the 5th.
I think, yeah, I'm so delirious after all this flying. So, yeah, I think we played the 2nd was our first show back. We played a show at the Whiskey in LA. And then I flew out, walked right from stage and got an Uber to go to the
Well,
play.
I know you were back home, too, for a little bit, because that's where I initially
picked
you up, was on your Twitch
on
stream.
On the Twitch stream, Yeah, that's a new passion I have. My dad is I don't know how much you want to know about this. Do you want to know that?
Go ahead.
I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't have asked if
so,
I didn't care.
Yeah, so my father is a guitar player, but he's also a computer engineer, and he taught at the University of Buffalo forever. So his guitar playing half went to my brother. And then there was no real anything of him that was dedicated to me that we like connected on. So then I finally started getting into like playing games. I've always been playing video games, but my friends were starting to get into PC to like play better games and play games faster. So I was like, you know, Dad, if you want to like tell me about PCs and like I would love to have one and, you know, kind of work on it and sort of like use it as like guitar gear. In the way that guitar gear heads use their gear, I would love to have a PC to have like and you know, modify and enhance. And he just like jumped to it. Like now all of a sudden I'm sitting with my dad and we're, you know, building shit and talking
Super
about
bonding.
It. It was awesome. It was awesome. And I'm 39 years old. So to have an experience like that with my dad at 39 years old was great. So yeah, then I got a PC powerful enough to start streaming and I do it now. And I love it.
Well, you were streaming the album, I think.
Yeah.
It just came out it was the day
it
before or something.
Out.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that was cool. Yeah, that was really fun seeing
you on
there.
Yeah, I loved it. I love it.
Well, a lot of bands stream video games or just stream in general. I mean, there's Twitch has a lot of other options too, as far as like creative or music goes. So
it's difficult. I don't feel like on, and I don't necessarily love talking, especially if I'm by myself. So streaming is rough because if I'm not with other people, then it's just me talking to myself, and
you have to have an audience,
right? And I have
not there with you,
right? And I have to keep narrating it, and you know, I very self conscious of like, am I getting boring? Am I talking too much? How much do people want to see me play? So all these things. So when the music was playing in the background and I was kind of like used that as an excuse to do it and people were asking questions, I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it worked out really well. And I felt like while I was in the room, the people that are there are always going to be, you know, all about what you're doing anyway. They're probably going to be your more bigger fans anyway.
Yeah.
So just having a hangout session with you was cool enough for them too.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. And like Twitch stream is, or the Twitch service is doing these like Twitch sing things now. It's like a karaoke thing. So one of the developers at Twitch actually reached out to me to like help me specifically push Twitch singing, like this new thing they're doing, this karaoke thing.
So we're gonna see the cover band on there.
So we're gonna work some stuff out. It'll be good.
You mentioned the 90s cover band on the stream.
Yeah, I just kind of glossed over it.
But that'd be cool. I think that would be something kind of unique.
Yes, and coincidentally, shortly after that, my cover band got offered 4 dates in Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of, Rory, promoter Rory? Yes, yeah. Yes. He's going to bring us down and give us 4
that's
shows.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Are you going to play here, obviously?
He plays. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to assume it's going to be here, Orlando, Tampa.
Sounds about right. I think that's exactly it.
He actually, shout out Rory. Him and Mikey have been, I mean, Mikey's probably booked you since day one. But yeah, they really been doing really well for the area here.
Good for them.
It's been picking back up in the last couple of years too. Cause
awesome.
Ebb and flow.
Yeah, yeah.
It just comes and goes. Totally. But yeah, they've been killing it lately.
Great.
Damn Thing. So first album in 9 years.
Yeah.
Something that is, apparent is on that record, you don't scream as much.
Yeah.
It's more of like a sing kind of situation.
Yeah.
However, today during your set, it kind of seems like you scream a lot more live. Is that because you're just like used to being an Every Time I Die a screamer?
It's not even that. It's just, I just feel like that's more of who I am. I hate saying that. Like, anyway, I feel like I'm just so much more comfortable sort of creating music in that style. Whereas I felt like the first Damn Things record with everyone's styles coming together and trying to find like this weird, you know, commonality between the different styles of bands. And, you know, there was like this Venn diagram where what was left for me was so slim that I didn't really get to have fun with it, I guess, because everyone else is so overwhelmingly talented and popular. And, you know, I'm just this kid from a hardcore band. So I don't, you know, like, you guys just go ahead and tell me what I should do. So that record came out and it was cool, but I wasn't necessarily in love with the way that I contributed to it. So once this record started getting written, I was very adamant about, like, I think that there should be more hardcore elements. I think there should be more punk elements to it. And, you know, everyone who's still in the band was very on board.
I don't think that the Fall Out Boys guys would probably...
They love
that.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. I mean,
even though they're huge and they're a big, you know, pop rock band.
But they have hardcore roots.
Yeah, they definitely grew up in that scene. And so when you said, like, oh, it's just me and a hardcore band guy, I feel like they're also that.
Totally.
But they're just thrust into, like, main pop culture.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, now that Dan's in the band, too, with Alkaline Trio, I mean, they have, you know, punk rock roots, too, and, you know, from Chicago with Fall Out Boy. So it worked out really well.
So, I mean, I'm sure y'all have answered this question a million times, but you just get a phone call from the Fall Out Boy guys, and next thing you know, you're in a super group with Ian and everybody?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much how it went. It was Joe and Scott were on, their bands, Anthrax and Fall Out Boy, shared management, and they were at some sort of party or vacation thing that rich people do. Something like Hawaiian vacation, and everyone was talking. Just opening up their jackets, showing off all their platinum records. And they were talking about starting a band, and I guess they had sort of gotten together once they got back to LA and were driving around listening to riffs that they had both written and talking about the band. And apparently the story is an Every Time I Die song like came up on a shuffle on one of their iPods. And they were like, well, what about him as a singer? So they both agreed and called me. I remember I was sleeping on the floor in the van on an Every Time I Die tour, like 10 blankets on me. It was the middle of winter. I don't know where we were. I was just miserable. And then I just get a call and they're like, hey, do you want to, it was Joe. And he's like, hey, me and Scott are talking about starting a band. Do you want to sing for us? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Call me tomorrow. Hawaii,
yeah.
Rings
They're like with Kirk Hammett and they're like hanging out and I'm like freezing in North Dakota. And I'm like, yeah, just fine. Just call me tomorrow. We'll talk about it more. But
Well, and then the rest is history for the most part. So why the long gap outside of you guys all having every other thing to do in the world? But
it really, you know what? It wasn't so much of having every other thing to do in the world. It really, it was an instance of we had written this album that none of us were really sure about. You know, we were proud of it and we were stoked that it worked and we came together and we put together everything. But as we toured on it, the responses were mixed. It wasn't sort of hitting the people that we wanted to connect with, and the people that were connecting it with it were, I don't know, not our normal comfort zone. And that's okay. It's okay to get out of your comfort zone, but it was a lot of sacrificing, like, our personal dignities to go out on stage every night and play these shows with, like, you know, and again, I don't want to disparage anybody, but, like, you know, these tattoo festival shows, and, like, then there's, like, a show with Buck Cherry, and it's like, I don't feel that way. And that's, you know, I'm not slandering anything. That's just not me. I didn't feel that way.
The background you come from is vastly different.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, if that's people's things, awesome. But just wasn't mine. So the last show we played, we were in New York City, and a hurricane hit, and we had to cancel the last few shows of the tour. And I just remember, like, leaving that show and just having no wind in my sails. And, like, I'm just going to go home, see what happens. And then, like, nobody talked for a while. It was sort of like, okay, everyone's sort of licking their wounds because the tour didn't do very well.
Would y'all think that's, like, the end of it?
Everyone kind of thought it was just going to be the end. But I never wanted to say, like, I never wanted to disavow it. And I never wanted to be like, just fuck that band. I'm done with that. That wasn't me. That wasn't who I am. Because I knew that there was something really special there. I really did. I knew, like, the way that we got along and the way that Joe and I wrote songs together was awesome. So I kind of always kept that door open. But, yeah, I guess it just kind of came around to the point where we felt confident enough where we had just sort of, like I said, licked our wounds and reapproached the idea that we had originally, which was just kind of make, like, a cool, hooky rock album with punk sensibilities. And I think we really finally did it, and I feel really good about this record. And it, going back to, like, study the old songs, has given them a different appeal to me. Like, it's a weird sort of new filter I look at it through. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, it didn't feel like 9-10 years ago.
Yeah, no, you know, it definitely doesn't, and I'm very excited about that.
When I hear that, it makes me, like, go, wow,
yeah,
that band,
yeah,
damn, things have been around that long.
Yeah,
I mean, so
it's crazy. Crazy, and yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe that, like, these people that are in this band still wanted to do it after all this time. Not only that, but that there were people that liked the band from the get-go that are still interested in it. So, I don't know. It's cool. I love playing with it. You know what I mean? Like, the show in L.A. was our first show after 9 years, so that was very, I don't know. I was very anxious during it and just sort of, like, nervous and, like, trying to remember everything. And then today, after all the flying shit happened, yeah, it just, I wasn't relaxed. But I'm really excited to start this tour and, like, just be on stage in clubs, playing. It's gonna be great. Venues, yeah.
So you and Joe write?
Yeah.
The music?
Yeah.
Or most of the music, I should say?
Yeah, it started with Joe just, like, writing riffs and sending them to me, and then I would sort of, you know, pitch ideas for melodies and things like that back to him with lyrics, and then we just kind of work on arrangements. So
you write the lyrics for the damn things too?
Okay. Yeah.
How, because, you know, you also are Every Time I Die a singer, so how does that differ between the two bands? Like, lyrical content, is one way and the damn things is a different thing? Or,
I mean, I guess if I had to figure out, like, where the line was between what separates Every Time I Die and Damn Things lyrics, it's that Every Time I Die lyrics are just way more personal. Like, it's just very much like, this is me, this is what I'm going through. If anyone could connect with it, cool. If not, fine, you know. But the Damn Things lyrics are, I feel a little more open to interpretation, if that makes sense. Because I know that,
more,
like, I understand that Every Time I Die lyrics are, you know, they're overwhelmed with metaphor a lot of the time, so. But I do feel like it's very specific to a certain kind of person. And, you know, Every Time I Die lyrics are very much for hardcore kids that grew up the way I did, that feel the same way I did about certain things, that get angry, that get really depressed, you know what I mean? And where Damn Thing stuff is more fun, I guess.
Yeah, I
that makes sense.
That.
Yeah.
Speaking of writing, you were a teacher at some point. Many a moon ago.
Yeah,
it feels
long time
like.
Ago.
Yeah. So you have a background in writing too, right? Like,
yeah.
You've written other, like, columns too, right? You've wrote columns and
I did comedic stuff. Yeah, I did, like, freelance writing for Alternative Press Magazine. I mean, Rockstyle Magazine in UK. Yeah, I did all that sort of journalistic stuff. I used to like do Alternative Press had like a segment where they would interview like celebrities about like an upcoming movie that I used to talk to. I mean, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Right. They would just put me on the phone with people that were in upcoming movies, and I would ask them questions.
How was that? Just interview, like, because you may not have a backstory. I didn't. On any of
I had nothing. I had nothing. It was.
It's hard to just bullshit.
It really is. Yeah, yeah. It really is, especially when like you're kind of familiar with people's stuff. Like Danny McBride, I remember specifically right before Eastbound and Down came out, we had
JP, can you come here,
please? We had to interview, or I had to interview him, and you know, I ended up just sort of geeking out about Foot Fist Way. You know what I mean? God. Like all this shit that like I didn't really care about his. I mean, I did care about him because I think he's funny. I just didn't know enough about his next stuff to not. You know, I had to talk about the stuff I knew. So
Foot Fist Way was just quote. I mean, I bring Foot Fist Way up all the time. It's that's amazing. Like one of my favorite Danny McBride movies.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So he was cool. I remember also talking to like the woman, I can't remember her name, Lauren something. She was in the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre whenever that came out a long time ago, but I wasn't really familiar with her. I don't know. Yeah. I was just kind of talking. I don't know.
All around us, it's hard to bullshit it a conversation.
It really is. It really is. But luckily, Danny McBride was nice. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of had that sort of, I put my foot in the water as far as like interviewing people, and I wasn't very good at it. So I
appreciate people that are. Well, you guys seem. You guys, I say, you, Andy, and Jordan, for the most part, to me, are like the most polarizing people in the entire band. I don't want to, like, again, slander anybody. You guys just seem to have, like, more outgoing personalities.
Yeah.
And your brother just seems to be fucking super funny.
Mm-hmm.
But you're funny in a way, too, so I just didn't know if, like, comedic writing or comedy down the road for you is a thing. I didn't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. I mean, I've written a few treatments for scripts and movies and series and things, and I'm just starting now to work with an actual writer who's done the Punisher series.
On Netflix?
Yes.
Or wherever.
Well, yeah, I don't know where it's premiering, or not premiering, or wherever it's housed now, wherever you can find it. I don't know. I can't even follow up with like network television. It might be there, maybe. Maybe it's on Netflix.
I think it might be on Netflix. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. The guy from Walking Dead, right?
I don't know.
I think he was the Punisher.
Maybe. He wrote for the Punisher. He wasn't an actor in it.
One of the bad guys, or not bad guys, one of the early guys, one of the cops in The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Was he on?
Okay.
Was the Punisher character?
Sure.
The same actor?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
If that's the same one we're talking about, I don't know.
Who knows?
I digress.
But he's like a real writer. And so he's like been walking me through like writing a script for a series. And we're just going to try to see what happens. So yeah, it's a comedic thing. And just sort of getting out there. I love writing. So
you do? Because you've also written a book or two, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch is the last one.
Yeah.
The latest
Watch.
One.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, where do you find time? Obviously, you're doing so many different things.
It's
you know?
Not really. It's not busy. Being in a band is not busy work. It's a lot of just fucking hanging out and waiting for something to do. And I mean, it's a lot of downtime, and I get very like anxious about I have to do something. Like I have to make my time worthy because I don't know how long I'm going to have this time. And now that I have a kid back home, it's like, well, I know when I'm home, I'm not gonna have any time to do anything. So when I'm on the road, I have to like do as much as possible. So yeah, I just write when I'm on the road.
Getting back to your tour coming up, the damn things kind of tying all that in. We're going to get on some sidetracks, obviously. But you guys are taking Crobot and He's Legend out.
Yeah.
He's Legend was on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
So we kind of had that information. But how did that come about, just choosing the He's Legend guys? Is it just like you?
I love Skylar. Okay. I mean, that band's awesome. So.
I feel the same way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
He's awesome. So
they're underrated. You guys are underrated too. I think both of your bands are underrated too. But I think He's Legend is also underrated.
He's just such a charismatic front man that, you know.
I called him Stevie Nicks.
Oh yeah,
he's kind of Stevie Nicks.
Totally, yeah, Stevie Nicks. Yeah,
he's good way to go. Yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of threw their name in the ring, and it worked out. And they have a new record.
Yeah,
out.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
White Bat or whatever coming out in June. Yeah, it should be a good time.
Yeah.
So, Every Time I Die, when are we going to expect like a new record? Obviously, you're doing the damn things right now, so.
I don't know. This is the longest we've had a break in a while.
Andy's doing the wrestling
thing. I know, man. It's so scary. I'm like a parent, like, watching my child. Like, I see videos of him, like, getting power slammed through tables. And I'm like, instead of like your child getting hurt, I'm like, he's a grown man. He's going to get hurt.
He's a big dude. So he falls hard, you know?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But, you know, it's fake to a point, but it's real. A lot of times it's real.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's scripted or not, they're still putting each other through tables.
You put your body on the line for sure.
Yeah.
How did that even come about with him? I mean,
he's always loved wrestling. I mean, always. I don't know how it really started where he was like, I'm going to just get back in the ring. But, I mean,
it's
kind of a slow process. He was kind of here and there. And, like, the Butcher and the Blade is his team. And the guy that he's with is named Jesse. And he's, like, an old friend of ours. So I know that Jesse was wrestling semi-professionally. And Andy was kind of, like, helping him train and work out. And, you know, they'd run some routines and shit together. But at some point...
Come on in.
Yeah, just get back in it. And, I've never seen a second stage of life that drastically different. I mean, Andy's like 40 years old, mm-hmm. you know, that's when you start winding down.
Oh, he's winding up. Man.
No,
he's
man,
trying, he's
he
trying
is
to be the Rock.
Ranking it up. Yeah.
No, it's awesome. good for him too.
It's inspiring.
Good for you to put yourself on the line in other aspects of your life too. It's good to, you know, like expand your, your personality. And
totally.
Being, but that's pretty cool that he's doing it, and it's cool that your brother does the art thing too.
Yeah, everyone's got something.
He's crazy good with that too, on top of guitar work. Yeah,
it's really cool. Everyone's very, I don't know, creative. I mean, it is. Everyone's like creating something else. That all these X factors are, you know, instead of distracting people from the band, they're actually helping everyone sort of gather things and come back to it. You know, and you know, we just played Mexico City yesterday. We haven't been on stage together since January.
Every time I die.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, like we didn't miss a beat. I mean, it was just so good to be back.
Well, I feel like you guys doing it for 20 something or almost 20 years, you know, it probably takes no time.
But there's, you know, there's always the possibility that you're going to go home, you're going to hang out with your kids, you're going to do your wrestling, you're going to, you know, do your art, you're going to do whatever you're doing, and then you're going to get back in on stage and you're going to be like, oh man, I really like that other shit I was doing better. So let's, you know.
Full-time Twitch streamer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, yesterday we hit stage, it was just like, man, you just remember why you did it in the first place. So.
And you played with Limp Bizkit and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw Fred Durst walking around. Dude, there was a point in the night where I was like, storms are coming through Texas, like getting word that flights might get delayed. I'm like, I wonder if Limp Bizkit has like a private jet. They're going back to Jacksonville. And maybe I should talk to, talk to Fred.
They're not coming here at all.
Well, I know they live here.
They don't.
What?
No, they're all LA guys now. They are from here.
Okay.
They're
LA guys. Well, in my head, I was like, maybe I can get a ride back.
We may have Sam on the podcast in the near future. Mm-hmm. We're kind of working that out. Mm-hmm. Working our way up, you know, Wes.
Yeah.
And Fred, you know, but also the Lamb Goat people probably will be super stoked on the biscuit being
on. Of course.
You know, it is what it is. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It is.
I wish I would have got to watch them yesterday. I don't know.
Did you mean
team? No, I didn't. They played almost the same time as us.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. But I saw Fred walking around.
He's a bit older now.
Yeah, man.
A bit older. Gray hair, white hair.
It was wild. Yeah. But, I mean, at least it's the band, and they're playing the hits, and they're still, you know, still touring.
I grew up on that band. I mean, I'm from here, and they're from here, so I grew up on that band. They're one of those bands that I, guilty pleasure.
Totally.
If you must.
Totally. Yeah, I kind of went the Deftones route of that whole...
Not bad
genre.
Either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Deftones always stuck out to me, so there was like the Korn, Limp Bizkit, Deftones fan.
You didn't even see Korn last night.
I didn't.
They were here.
I know.
Delayed, but they were here. Speaking of Deftones, JP and I have this discussion periodically. What's your favorite Deftones record?
Diamond Eyes.
Nice.
You like that one?
Too.
Yeah.
I think it's their best album.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
That will leave.
I got to
Around the Fur.
Around the
that front. Was an amazing, that was like a very seminal record for me with them that sort of like amplified my fandom for them significantly, because I love that record so much. But Diamond Eyes was just,
I think that
boy.
Was a full on, like they hit a stride.
Just,
and they
like the caterpillar becoming a butterfly moment of just like, this is like, the Deftones are just a massive.
Huge. Yeah,
massive,
right then, and I got to see them live during that tour too in Tampa. I wasn't really stoked on the ones after that, though, you know?
Yeah.
It is what it is, but...
We, this kind of goes back to the Damn Things. So the Damn Things recorded some of the vocals with Nick Raskolenitz that did Diamond Eyes. And, like, we went to the studio where they recorded it, and we got him talking about that session, which was, I guess, Steph, like, they came in with a record called Eros, apparently. Mm-hmm. And
I kind of remember, I remember hearing about that.
And Nick's like, no, not doing, this is not the record that you guys are putting out through me. So
that was the first one that they recorded without their bass player,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, because he had gotten in the combo. Yep.
So he's like, no, this is not, I'm not putting out this record. We're going to start from scratch. And they wrote Diamond Eyes, like, in a recording session. And apparently Steph, like, got so high all day that, like, he only recorded at night after smoking weed the entire day. And Nick said that he nailed everything so perfectly that there's only one riff on the record that he had to do twice.
Wow.
Yeah, because he was so high.
PSA.
Absolutely, yeah. Legalize marijuana.
Or just use it for more creative stuff, you know? So how do you guys write for Every Time I Die? Is it more just like Jordan Andy?
That's riffage? Everyone. That's everyone gets together.
Oh, cool.
And just riffs.
So it's like a group census. All right.
Yeah.
Very. And how do you? Because I mean, my favorite album for you guys is like Hot Damn.
Thanks.
But I think most of that is like some nostalgia.
Yeah, it must be because that songwriting is not good. I mean, that was just kids that didn't know what we were doing.
So
we're just moshing.
Kid,
yeah,
you're like blasphemy.
Well,
no.
I'm not saying it's not good. What it's just we didn't know how to write songs. We were just hardcore kids that like, hey, let's just mosh this and then go into a weird part and then mosh this. And you know, I mean, we weren't musicians. We were just trying to be in a band. You know that. And being a musician is very different than being in a band when it's like the late 90s, early 2000s. You just love hardcore, you know. You're not interested in songwriting.
No, yeah, because you're not thinking about any kind of gold record, platinum record.
Nothing.
You're mainstream, just, anything,
right.
Yeah.
You're just, in your brain is like, what are kids going to go nuts for? Let's do that. Okay, well, are kids going to go crazy for this? Yeah, let's do that. And then just put them all together.
So is it different now? Do you think about things differently when you're writing
it? I think just a little bit because, you know, we've been on the road for so long and been putting out records that we do understand what, you know, what we connect with as opposed to what like really puts people away. And I don't know. I mean, I think that it's cool to like do, you know, like these strange tempos and have things that are very confusing and technical. And I do appreciate the musicianship of that. But I think for Every Time I Die, we'd really just rather get in a room with a bunch of kids that all kind of connect and share the same idea about the lyrics and can follow the music and mosh and then not get confused and then, you know, just have a great time and stage dive and then leave. You know what I mean? And just kind of
party band.
Yeah, I mean, but still really feel like there was something special in the room. Because I feel that there's a lot of musicians today, and there always have been, that are like, don't like their fans, and they're actively trying to distance themselves from their fans, which is a strange thing, especially when you're in a hardcore band. You know.
Well, I think the hardcore scene is way different than the rock scene in general. I think it's more of friends and bros,
and all
sorts of like, you know, get together and come togetherness.
I know that personally, I would rather never once for 1 second look out at a crowd and see someone like not knowing what's happening. You know what I mean? Like with things get too technical and, you know, everyone kind of has to step back and listen and then try to figure it out. I would just rather people just get into the moment and stay in that moment for the whole show. So,
so we're sitting here having some Coors Lights. You're allergic to alcohol though, correct?
No, kind of. I used to be. I used to be very allergic to it.
Just powered
through
it.
Yeah. Just pushed right through it.
Because I know on one of the DVDs you may have said you stopped drinking or whatever.
Yeah, I had for a little bit.
And I was honestly
disappointed.
A little
in
bummed.
Me.
Yeah.
Oh, I am too. I don't like when people stop drinking because this, like, the idea that you can't use moderation and you have to be like just one extreme or the other is really bad to me. And I had done that. I admit I was just trying to figure out like where I felt most comfortable, but I'm okay with being middle of the road. I mean, I don't get so drunk that I black out, and you know, I'm not like a violent drunk. So.
Well, you took a break.
Yeah, I took a break.
How long was your break?
5 months.
5 months?
Yeah.
Oof, I went a year.
Did you? Oh. Did you like it? I bet nobody liked you.
No, I didn't like anybody.
Yeah, it's weird because especially when like your whole a lot of your friendships and relationships are based around the social aspect of drinking, it's very lonely.
Well, and people become a slightly abrasive, slightly annoying, slightly, I can't hear what you're saying,
and
you're
then,
slurring.
And then you have no option but to be sanctimonious of like, well, I'm not drinking, so I'm out of here.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then they, you know, there's resentment and it's all, you know, when you establish a relationship and a chemistry and then you, you know, throw that out the window because you decided you want to stop drinking for some reason, then it leads to a lot of resentment. It's strange. And then you realize that like drunk conversations don't mean anything, and then
more annoying than anything.
It's totally
You're stuck in situations where, and then myself, I was like, well, I'm not drinking, everyone else is drinking,
right.
So I'm just gonna fucking power through
right
it,
you know? Yeah,
but I did pick up the bottle again, I guess you could say, and then it wrecked me. The year off wrecked me, because I can't. Three beers and it's like, I'm done, you know?
That's fine, though.
But, you know,
it's fine.
It's good. I would probably like you, just fucking killing it left and right. But
you're
in a touring band, so
it's I can't do... I can't do that anymore. If I drink too much and I can't... I don't have a voice the next day. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, now that I'm a parent and, you know, I'm married and I know how difficult it is to get out of your house to go do something social... Like, there's a lot of elements that have to come. Like, you got to find a babysitter. You got to make sure you can pay the babysitter. And you got to get Ubers. And you got to, you know, arrange everything. I can't imagine people doing that to come to a concert where I am just – or show where I am just hammered and I don't care about it because it's just another day on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm starting to – you know, I want to value other people's time because there's no – elements to someone's life that's more important to them than their time. So if they're going to spend their time with us, I have to value that.
Yeah, let alone money.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's the fact that people devote time to us is really important to me. So,
well, I mean, it's crazy too because I grew up. Obviously, we talked before the podcast. I grew up seeing you guys come through town here and from Buffalo every chance that I could. So. It's one of those things I never really thought, like, 20 years later, I'd still be listening to you guys.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
So I never would have expected
you're
either.
You're one of those bands with a couple other bands from that time that are still just, you know, killing it. Not even, I shouldn't say killing it, but killing it. But, you know, you put out records.
Yeah.
And they're fucking good, just as good as the last one. And it's just, you know, killer music. Just like, I was trying to bring it up earlier, your discography, as far as, like, how the sound changed and how it progresses. But like you said, you're just hardcore kids and a hardcore band.
Yeah,
hardcore
and but that's always sort of what we've used when we approach music writing is that like this is a community that we've grown up in that we're very dedicated to, and we understand why it's important to other people. So we know exactly why they're listening to us, and that's more important to us than expressing ourselves as like, you know, this evolving artist. Like, we can do that in other ways.
Right.
You know what I mean? I can write books and Jordan can draw and Andy can wrestle. But when it comes to Every Time I Die Music, it's for the hardcore community. Like, that's what we're a part of. That's what this band is a part of.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, we're not musicians. We're just kids writing hardcore songs still, you know?
Well, it's great too. Cause, you do have a place in hardcore history. I think, you know, just being a casual fan of just hardcore music, let alone Every Time I Die and stuff. But I think you guys have created your pillar on the...
Yeah, I mean, you do anything long enough, you can convince people that you're doing it right.
Consistency.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Consistency is key.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is your favorite album for, like, you personally? And if do you know if the band has a favorite album together?
Let alone
being, like, the newest one, because that's always, like...
It's always... I know it is, and I know that the newest one is always...
Or dislike...
Hot
Damn.
I like Hot Damn a lot. I really do. I really thought that was like, you can see. No, I'm good. Like, you can see us as kids sort of realizing that we have something special. And we're, you know, we're all putting everything into it. I do love the newest one, though. I mean, only because it came out of such a dark time that what it means to me to have turned
routines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So to have turned that the lowest part of my life ever into something like that is very important to me. So I respect that album for like saving my life in a way, because while I was going through it, I was writing the lyrics and it really was like the most therapeutic thing that's ever happened, you know, that I could have hoped for. But I guess as a band, I think probably The Big Dirty, because I think that was where it kind of like our, like, we were having fun and like it met this, the, you know, this like, I don't know, fake arrogant swagger meant like real good mosh. You know what I mean?
It definitely was a party fun record.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was still very hardcore and, you know, there's good, really good. I mean, Werewolf still goes over really well. It just, there's a lot from that album.
That might be my second favorite out of the whole discography.
Yeah.
But, you know,
there's a lot of stuff in that record that still holds true.
The New Black.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of remember it being about something back in the day. I haven't checked into it, but what is it about,
the song? I wish you would ask me this. I wish you would ask me to prepare this, because I think it was
something kind of like, because you guys don't sell out per se as far as like your sound or anything like that, but I felt like it was kind of, there were other bands maybe.
It was
in
a
that
statement
area.
On people selling out.
Okay.
Yeah, I will say that. It was satire of people around us were doing that. There was a lot of bands. At that point,
a lot of bands that you might have toured with.
Yep. That were signing record deals and changing their style. And, you know, so the New Black just meant like, well, it's just a new take on this, like, old sadness that we used to, this old anger that we used to have. Now it's new and now it's poppy and now it's like.
Well, the song is also borderline poppy too.
Yeah, but that was kind of the joke of it.
Obviously.
Was that we were,
it's a great song, though.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah.
It's been on some video games itself. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. That was wild.
Were you guys ever on the Guitar Hero game? I know
that
you were.
That song was.
That was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't played Guitar Hero in a long time.
I
remember you guys.
It. I'll stream it when I get home. Yeah.
Have Jordan stream it.
Yeah.
Play it on the Guitar Hero.
You could do that.
Yeah.
But that's the only time I can ever play the guitar is Guitar Hero. So
no musical quality
outside
of the vocalist?
No. Oh. Literally nothing.
I'm learning guitar.
Are you?
Like borderline. Step one.
That's awesome.
It is
good for you.
You know, I'm 35, so I figure, fuck it, why not now?
I have a guitar in my living room because, my dad was a guitar player, so like I have guitars around, and I kind of want I have a guitar in my living room that I'll like pick up and just kind of fuck around with once in a while. But I think it's really funny the idea that my daughter is going to think that she grew up around a guitar playing dad just because she kind of sees me play, and I can't play anything, but you know, I'll muscle through some power chords and things like that, but. If she grows up thinking that I played guitar her whole life, what a joke.
She'll be like, I played guitar.
Yeah.
My dad played guitar.
Yeah, my dad was a guitar player. Like,
I just remember as a kid.
Yeah, he was always doing it.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, Alex has a question. He wanted to know, what is it like being in a band with millionaires when you yourself aren't a millionaire?
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing.
It's got to be awkward,
right? It's so embarrassing. It's like Uncle Joe in Great Expectations, like the guy that just shows up to like the art gala and like fumbles over himself. I mean, that's how I feel. I feel like really bad about myself because I don't know how to behave in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time.
Is it a drastically different world as far as
it's
like.
It's not that different. But it's a huge cultural shock when you first really experience it. I mean, I remember for my birthday when, like, after the Damn Things recorded the first record, we were in New York, and my wife flew into New York, and Scott and Joe had said, like, this great dinner at, like, a Michelin restaurant for my birthday, and I got fucking hammered and, like embarrassed myself. I didn't know how to behave. You know what I mean?
Candy shop.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how to behave. So I'm trying to understand that. But as I'm doing it now, you know, as I'm going through the writing process with Joe, and I've been to Joe's house a bunch of times, and he's got a beautiful house, and he's still just like a hardcore kid at heart. You know what I mean? So it's just really, he's almost as in awe of it as anybody is.
It is. I mean, now we're 2020 hindsight, you know, with Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
But, it was crazy to see that whole
Expected that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really believe it. They never expected that. Just something happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Dance Dance or
yeah,
Sugar
like
Kurt
Loder
down,
all of a sudden is covering their show at Fireside Bowl in Chicago, and he's like, I just don't know how that MTV attention got drawn to them, but they handled themselves very well, and I think they've stayed really true to who they were when they started, and it's awesome. But yeah, I'm not good around rich people at all.
I wouldn't think that, you know, hardcore kids.
I would love money so that I didn't ever have to worry about paying bills and things like that. But man, it's so embarrassing. I mean, I would just like take all my money and go to Red Lobster all the time. That's how I feel that wealth is represented. If you can go to Red Lobster, yeah, Yeah. If you can get the Captain's Feast. Yeah. If you can get the Captain's Feast, you are a fucking millionaire.
Again, he was sleeping in a van.
And now I can get some all-you-can-eat shrimp once in a while.
Well, so you know, it might be around. Long John Silver, things but it's still all-you-can-eat. Yeah. What is your worst habit? Do you have any bad habits outside of your alcohol, obviously?
No, I don't think so.
Bite your nails?
Child porn. I deal in child porn a lot. I guess that's kind of it.
That is a joke for all intents and purposes.
I actually did. I started smoking a while ago again. I quit for 7 years. And then when my wife and daughter were in the hospital, I was like, I need a cigarette. And I actually made that into a lyric in my brain. It's like, I just need a cigarette. And so I had one, and then it was a slippery slope. And then for 2 years I smoked, but then I stopped a year ago. So
only cigarettes?
Only cigarettes. Yeah, I'm not good with weed.
Oh, no?
I'm really bad with weed. I'll either I'm too, I feel like I laugh at the wrong shit and I give people the wrong idea.
Of course.
I make not funny people seem like they're funny and I don't want to encourage them.
I don't think you do. I think that's just the weed, but
yeah.
I think cause some people get, weird in public and whatnot.
Yeah.
I just think, those people need to smoke more and get in public more.
So. I agree. And I'm definitely one of those people that I would only do it if I was at home. And then I would do it once in a while on tour. And then we were sharing a bus with Terror on Warped Tour, and I was kind of smoking it a little more regularly. And I was having a great time, and people really liked being around me. And I was I feel like I'm leading them on. I'm misrepresenting myself because I'm not this funny all the time. But when I smoke weed, us and Terror, me and the guys in Terror just locked in with sense of humor. So it would just be hours of just laughing. And I was you know what? It just feels false because it's just the drugs talking. So.
It could, but I think it just allow. I mean, it could, you could be completely right.
Yeah.
But I also think it just,
loosens
just like
up.
Alcohol loosens you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bad habits, got that. What are you looking forward to as far as your musical career, whether that be with Every Time I Die or The Damn Things? Because I feel like those both bands are way different directions in general. So
yeah, I don't know. Every Time I Die is one of those things where it's the fact that we've been able to be consistent for 20 years, we're just going to keep playing as long as people want to hear us. And, extremely grateful for that because I know that the attention span in the hardcore scene is pretty short.
Especially these days with
the
internet.
Yeah, totally. So I'm not going to take any of that for granted, but I do understand that eventually we'll probably age out of it. And I guess with The Damn Things, I just want to be in a Marvel movie. I want to be sitting in the theaters watching a Marvel movie and hear a Damn Things song.
Oh, yeah?
That'd be great.
Well, I mean,
why not? I mean, you gotta have
industry.
A goal.
Yeah, you're in the industry.
You gotta have
a
goal.
Video game song, so
right.
Why not?
When you're in a theater and you think about, the person that puts together the soundtrack for the movie, that's such a cool job. It's one of the ideal jobs to have is figuring out what songs go where in a movie. So if someone were to put in Every Time I Die, or a Damn Thing song in a movie, I'd be flattered.
Which song? And what would be your ideal movie?
I'll tell you what, actually, with...
I do have a question. What is your favorite soundtrack, though?
Favorite soundtrack.
Okay, so Baby Driver is a really good soundtrack.
I haven't even seen that.
Oh, it's a really good one.
Really?
But I also do love, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou's soundtrack for some reason. I just think it's really appropriate. Favorite soundtrack though. I don't know, man. It's just one of those things where it's not even I need, if I hear it apart from the movie, does it move me in those scenes? How well does it convey, And I think that Oh Brother Art Thou is probably the best one. I don't know why.
I think you're not alone in that.
Yeah.
I think that's a wildly popular soundtrack in general.
And I wouldn't listen to it, I probably wouldn't listen to it on its own. But yeah, it's great. That's a great scene. But yeah, I don't know. I like the idea that there could be an Every Time I Die song in the movie or a Damn Thing song in the movie. And when we wrote It Remembers with Every Time I Die, I was like, this is I think I was talking to Jordan about this, but let's write this song like it's going to be in a True Detective intro. Yeah, and so okay, so that was it, how It Remembers came.
So anyone from Hollywood that's listening,
Keith Harvey Weinstein's out there.
Keith, Jordan, and Andy, and the boys are waiting, and Ian and Joe, they're waiting. They're waiting for, they have many a discography to choose from.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an open book.
Yeah.
Well,
I know you want to get to dinner.
And we're about
50 minutes in, so I could probably cut you loose.
Okay.
We would love to have you back on, obviously.
Awesome, that's great.
I know you're going to be in Atlanta with Every Time I Die at some point in this month or next month?
Next month.
In June?
Yes. Yeah.
We'll be there for that.
Okay.
So, you know, not to have you on, but maybe Jordan, Randy, or if you want to join, it's all good.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, sure. Yeah.
No.
I'll get you someone else.
By far, we're my first choice.
I'll get you someone else.
When we started this whole thing, Keith was one of the first ones.
Guys.
It's you or Daryl from Glass Jaws, ideal guest. So I'll knock one of them out.
I hope I lived up to the expectation.
100%.
Thanks, buddy.
Well, is there anything that we should check out as far as like new music that you've heard on the road or new shit in general? Your favorite band.
New Knock Loose is new Damn Things came out last week. It's called High Crimes.
Steam it or buy it. Definitely come to a show and buy some merch.
Yes, please do that. New Knock Loose is coming out soon, which this might be exclusive, but I'm on the new Knock Loose record.
That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
The last single they put out was pretty killer.
They're just the best. They're the best. Also, I'm Twitch streaming at twitch.tv/KeithEtid. So
we'll add that into the description for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was good to see you on there. It's good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Boy, I try to keep it all under wraps.
Hey, you did it. You did it well. Cool. Yeah.
Well, that's about it.
Cool.
Ending these is always hard.
Just got to cut it loose.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.